Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Good morning. It's the Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Justin and Ailish. We are back in our normal, quaint little studio this morning. Yesterday, we were at Rattlesnake Point Golf Club for the Blue Jays Jays Care Golf Classic. And now we're back in our nice little studio, and it's good to be home.
So cozy. Good to drink out of the horse's mug yet again. Yes. Very excited to be doing this. Back. I don't know if it's been, what, 2.5 weeks, I suppose? Maybe closer to 3 weeks? I guess 2.5 weeks. I'm not really sure. Not
good at math. We were in the other studio, if people don't remember.
Yes, we were in afternoon's other studio, so we're back here for the first time. It's nice to be back.
Good to see familiar faces at our 6 a.m. news right outside our door saying hello, good morning. Good to see our folks.
Doing the hellos again. It was wonderful.
We're back. And what a way to get back into the morning grind with a 10 p.m. start, extra innings game on the West Coast.
So how long did you make it for?
I would have watched what was over half live, and then extra innings would have made it just around half. Then I watched the other half in the morning.
Yeah, extra innings hurts you there. Half and half. Yeah, I just did Blue Jays and 30 in the morning. First three innings,
it's
Blue
beautiful.
Jays and 30, and all I saw. And actually, I have a little quibble with Blue Jays and 30 because it was the Jay Jackson legacy game, as
yes.
I'm told by many on Twitter and on our podcast feed. On the Jays Talk podcast feed, only saw one inning from Jay Jackson on Blue Jays and 30. Had to watch the second inning just to make sure I got the full experience for young Jay
There's
Jackson.
There's just too much action to
there
put
was,
it all
there
in
was
there last
a lot
night.
Of action. There so, was a lot of action.
So 6-3 win over the Dodgers. First time since 2019 that Blue Jays have been at Dodger Stadium. It's such a beautiful ballpark. That was like an aesthetically pleasing game. The Dodgers uniforms are top five for sure. Like crisp, clean, classic, the white, the blue with the little red, like the stadium's beautiful. The Blue Jays look good there with their blue and white. And just, it was real nice baseball to watch.
Yeah, and the third oldest stadium, and it's like, it doesn't seem like there's any issues
no,
with it.
It looks
like,
pristine.
It just looks perfect. I mean, I guess the oldest stadiums are the ones that have the most charm and the ones that people really want to go to and people get excited about. And we get excited, of course, about Dodger Stadium and Wrigley and all those. But it's remarkable how it's just still good. Despite being the third oldest ballpark. And the other two that are older, Wrigley and Fenway, are still pretty good too. But I guess Fenway had a bit of a facelift. But yeah, it's a beautiful stadium. I wish they were there every year.
We have John Morosi on. Let's tee that up a little bit later in the show because it is 1 week until the trade deadline. He's been putting out a lot of timely and important updates. We're hoping that he'll do so at 7 a.m. as well regarding the Blue Jays, regarding some players that apparently have the Blue Jays on their no trade list, and of course the latest on Shohei Ohtani. So before we get into our trade deadline chat, just a heads up that we'll have John Morosi at 7. Okay, so last night, Blue Jays with a big win. Now they have a American League best 30-20 in their last 50 games.
That snuck up on me, by the
that
way.
Is, like, that's
really?
Shocking.
The
American
Orioles, the
League
Orioles
best.
Catch the Rays 30-20. In this 50-game stretch, I guess, if you want to segment it that mm-hmm. way. And yet the Blue Jays have the better record over the last
close,
50 games. I'm a little surprised by that. But yeah, 30-20 is a good mark.
A big win last night. Let's start with, there's lots to go through, of course, the Jay Jackson legacy game. But starting pitching. So Jose Berríos was good. Like, good. I'm not going to say he was great. I'm not going to say he was bad. But he did kind of what he needed to do to keep them pretty low score to start off this game. But Grove. Yeah, so yesterday in the game was Michael Grove, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's pitching pretty really well, like pretty well. People are like, oh, this guy, who's this guy? Like, you know, we hadn't seen him much. And Blue Jays had really never seen him. We teed this up yesterday during our final segment of the game. Not a lot of history with Michael Grove. He's looking pretty good to start the game, striking out lots of Blue Jays. And then, was it the end of the fourth inning or close to the fourth or fifth inning? He gets asked to, after you walk off the inning, to look at your hands, of course, as the umpires do, and asked to go change his pants.
The old sticky check.
Asked to go change his pants. He's wearing crisp white pants, but there's like a little section that is brown
mm-hmm.
on the side of his leg.
The side,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, everybody.
Yeah.
And there's replays being played on Sportsnet, right, of him pitching and then wiping his hand on this area. So, I mean, our Blue Jays broadcast broke it down really well that if you, you know, if there is sticky stuff there, that could be the process that he's going through. But he's asked to change his pants and he comes back and he sucks. Like, he's a completely different pitcher.
Yeah.
Immediately two hits, two runs. Like, clearly, if you can put two and two together, he comes back into the game with new
pants.
You're
calling shenanigans.
He comes back into the game with new pants and he's a completely different pitcher. I don't know. I kind of follow the bouncing ball there. I'm just saying. Why do you get to come back and pitch in the game, though, is my question.
Well, I think it's a good thing that he got to come back and pitch in the game because he finally got the real Michael Grove, or the Michael Grove with a 6-something ERA suddenly showed up in that
inning. But you don't believe there's something sketchy there?
Yeah, but, I mean, this is the thing. I mean, we've went through this before with Domingo Germán and how he gets through three perfect innings, I think it was, against the Blue Jays, and it comes back. They don't get those innings back, and they don't get the innings back last night at Dodger Stadium, clearly.
It worked out in their favor, but if it didn't,
they actually get a chance to go after him again. Like, if you were Dave Roberts, and it's like, okay, you're complicit in this. You know that old Michael Grove with the 6-something ERA can't
all of a sudden's dialed.
Can't get those breaking balls over without the sticky stuff. Mm-hmm. And he gets checked and he's like, go change your pants. We need pants number two. And Dan Schulman had a really good moment
of
unintentional comedy last night when he was talking about him coming back into the game. But yeah, pants number two's on. If you're Dave Roberts and you know pants number one, the only pants that are going to work, why don't you just give him the hook then?
Maybe it's just too telling, like, don't come back because you were cheating.
New pants, but a little back flare up. Little Ailish Forfar on the par three yesterday, back flare up.
That's good.
I mean, if you're Dave Roberts, you got to be, at least immediately, someone's got to be up in the bullpen, though, no?
Well, whoever was next was starting to warm up real quick, though, after they saw him out there with clean hands and clean pants.
How much of this do you think goes on in Major League Baseball where there are managers who know that they have nothing with a certain pitcher without sticky stuff?
I don't know.
There's got to be a handful. There has to be.
Oh, like, there's
like
a handful.
Like Domingo Germán. I mean, it was like pretty obvious.
Also,
I mean, he did. Was it a perfect game? I don't know if he had the sticky stuff going in the perfect game. But it was so obvious in that moment. This guy's blowing up. Has been terrible all year. Suddenly sticky stuff. Dominant. Sticky stuff gone. Not so dominant. I guess the perfect game does nullify that argument a little bit. But I bet there's a handful of guys, and managers know, and it's like, okay, if we can get away with it, we can get away with it. If not, I got to be looking for option B here.
A tough decision to do so with the whitest pants possible in the league.
Yeah,
like, not even gray.
Pants
did not help you.
Had never been through a wash.
Those
once.
Were crisp out of the bag.
Yes.
Hanging in the locker room to be worn for the first time. So, I don't know, Michael Grove. Maybe we're on to you. Maybe the 6 ERA is truly who you are. Yes, he ends up with 4 and 2/3 innings pitch, 8 hits, 6 Ks. So he was on a little streak there with all this with his Ks. But nonetheless, the Pants had
other ideas
and a different type of streak. Okay, so there's Michael Grove. That storyline. It's when you're watching last night's game, there was a lot of, all right, I'm in the dock, I'm writing down thoughts that ended up aging poorly by the end of the game.
Thoughts. What were some of those thoughts?
Thoughts on
your version of the draft, the save draft tweets.
It was like, I'm like,
or the Zeets,
I'm in the dock saying,
you see that Zeets?
Yeah. No, I thought they're X's.
I think it's Zeets. It might be GIF, Jeff, but like,
God,
if it's X-E-E-T-S, the new tweets are Zeets. Anyway, go on with Blue Jays discussion.
I missed that one. Yeah, so I'm in the dock and I'm writing down, okay, so early on in the game, I'm like, oh, what a quick pace game. Like, this is awesome. Then it ends up going to extra innings. I'm writing, oh, God, Dalton Varsho is just not doing any favors for himself. Maybe he gets DFA'd, like, you know, hot takes in the dock. Okay, well, he ends up having a good, great moment that he seriously needed at the end of this game. Before he was coming in, he was batting 128 in his previous 16 games. 128, 6-for-47. Then he gets a first two-hit game since June 17th. The go-ahead RBIs. Huge, huge moment for him. And extra is bringing those two runs. I mean, it was a little bit of a misplay by Jason Hayward, but, like, not charged with an error, whatever. It doesn't matter. Sometimes you need good luck on your side. Dalton Varsho, who has been pretty outspoken, even post-game, about not being at his best. I think that's easily stated. he gets a good moment. So I'm there, like, in the heading of Dalton Varsho, being, oh, okay, he kind of aged himself well there. Springer, maybe that one didn't change as much.
Yeah, no, not so much.
He's been pretty brutal lately. We get our guy, Genesis Cabrera, in there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, okay, pitching's going well. But then the Jay Jackson game, that one, I didn't see coming, right? Because yesterday we talked about, well, Nate Pearson getting demoted. You know, oh, there were some other options. Why Nate Pearson? Obviously a big vote of confidence for Jay Jackson. And I seriously think they made the right decision when you look at how he pitched last night.
Yeah, if we're doing like the revisionist history thing, mm-hmm. I mean, I really thought that Jay Jackson's season would be, hey, I got absolutely clobbered by Aaron Judge in the Aaron Judge game where he was glancing at his third base coach or first base coach, whatever one it was. And then he goes on, I think The Athletic wrote an article, I think it was Rosenthal, was like, yeah, I was tipping pitches, and now I'm back in the minor leagues. Like, it was such a weird thing. Like, if you're grinding for as long as Jay Jackson was, I didn't think you'd be so honest with what you were doing wrong because you're trying to prove yourself as a major leaguer. But I guess no secrets is a good thing. So Jay Jackson gets his chance again, of course, since that Aaron Judge moment. And he's been awesome.
Yeah.
He's really has
he
been
really
awesome.
He really has been.
Like, it's kind of, it's not in the same, I mean, I guess it is in the same vein as Trevor Richards just a little bit. But I personally have been dealing with, like, okay, is this for real? Is that guy for real? Can he do it when it matters most? I'm doing this with every single member of the bullpen, at least it seems. And I guess Jay Jackson is a part of that conversation where it's, is this real? Is this guy actually ready for leverage? Can he give you something in a big spot? And I think those two questions, those latter questions that I just asked, were kind of answered last night. Like, I think you kind of want him in bigger spots. I think you want him in leverage or semi-leverage. I think you want him in moments where he can shine because Jay Jackson has passed pretty much every single test this season aside from the Aaron Judge knows what's coming
but
test.
But even that, like, you get blown up. Then you find a way back into the trust tree. That's not easy. Like, that, you almost need to see a little bit of adversity, a little bit of trial and error, grind your way back into it. Because if it just comes smooth sailing the whole time, you might have in the back of your mind, well, let's see what happens when. So he comes in yesterday, two hitless innings of relief against the best hitters in the Dodgers lineup. I don't know. You legitimately cannot ask for more from Jay Jackson than what you got last night. He looks confident on the mound. The guys respond to that. He seems like the real deal. So the Blue Jays found something there that I think has surprised a lot of people. Jordan Romano gets the save as well, his 28th of the year. So we talked a lot about this bullpen over the last little bit. I don't think that changes everything for you, but you see Jay Jackson in a really big spot deliver. We got to see the very first debut of Genesis Cabrera, who pitches a scoreless sixth inning with a strikeouts as well. So he's the lefty that's like he faces the two lefties and delivers against those. Going to be important to have someone in your bullpen that can also do that, not just to rely on one guy. So a little bit of opportunity first outing. Also, couldn't really ask for more from him.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like what are we're getting about the game 100 around that mark. Yeah. Like, we're deep into this season, and the Jays have only had one option, one lefty
That's
option
it.
This entire year, and Tim Mayza was not available last night to the Toronto Blue Jays. And it's like, so what was the solution before? Like, what were they doing before?
There
because
was none.
You didn't have Genesis Cabrera to come in and do the secondary Tim Mayza thing last night, like he did, and he was good, and I'm slightly encouraged by that. I'm not going to go over the moon. I'm not also going over the moon about Jay Jackson either. I think all these guys, I think the entire bullpen still has a lot to prove, and I will keep saying that and whatever. It is what it is. But yeah, it's Jay Jackson's not like penciled in or a permanent marker. You want him in the biggest moments. I don't think we're there yet. We're not there yet with Genesis Cabrera, but these are good moments. These are good things that you can hopefully build around. These are options for you at a time where you are fielding and looking at all of your options before a trade deadline. Mm-hmm. And I think if you can feel comfortable enough with a couple games remaining here and seeing just a little bit more, maybe you prevent yourself from making a move that's going to hurt you. Maybe you prevent trading a prospect for a guy who's actually not going to give you any contributions because you're forced to nibble around the edges when you shouldn't nibble around the edges. It's either full measures or nothing. That might be the case for the Toronto Blue Jays here. But yeah, I don't know how you cannot be pretty encouraged by what you saw, at least from the depths of the bullpen last night. I guess from the bullpen overall, Trevor Richards obviously has a moment that you're going to regret there against Max Muncy. But yeah, in terms of debuts, great for Cabrera. In terms of moments for Jay Jackson, awesome. Let's build on these moments. Let's see if there's anything more in the tank.
Yeah, and a moment for Dalton Varsho, which for me was the biggest, I don't know, if we're going to glamorize moments and how they might mean something, I really hope it means something for Dalton Varsho. We do have his post-game clips yesterday speaking to the media about what it was like to be able to help the team win during a month where he has been struggling, and let's hope that this means something for Dalton Varsho.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's been a tough month for me, but obviously, you got to keep your head up, got to keep grinding, and got to help this team win any way possible. And it could be as simple as taking a walk instead of obviously rolling over, swinging at a bad pitch. And, you know, I had an opportunity earlier today of trying to get Chappie in from third base, and I didn't get it done, and being able to come up with another opportunity again and getting done, it was a great feeling.
I mean, certainly doesn't excuse how he's been playing as of late, but sometimes you just need a moment. I'm going to hope for the best because it's just hard to come on here and just rip a guy for a month straight. And that's what we've been kind of able to do with Dalton Varsho. But I think we've been quiet on George Springer. George Springer certainly deserves a lot of the, I guess, criticism or attention. He's been brutal lately. So many ground out doubles. It feels like he gets the plate and you're like, okay, ground out double. He's got like a MLB high 29th time this season that George Springer has made outs with runners in score position on the first or second pitch. So he just isn't giving his plate appearances are quick and non-eventful in terms of giving the Blue Jays anything to build on. He's had three bad double plays in the last two games, and that's 16 of them in the MLB, which is second high. It's just, I don't know if he's rushing his plate appearances. He's not giving any patience, but you are the top of the order for a reason. And I think it's fair to ask how much longer we see George Springer in the leadoff position. When he used to be, and he was, he's probably still up there, the guy that's like the most leadoff homers, right? Like it was just like George Springer,
yeah,
leadoff homer.
Has he fallen in love with that? Is that something that's happening? I'm not really sure.
I mean, I don't make the decisions, but it seems interesting that that has been a constant, right? Like we've seen some tinkering later in the lineups. I wonder how long we see that, or if that's just a staple of the way the Blue Jays do their lineup.
It seems like a staple for sure. Before a demotion, I'd like to just see like a change in tactics. Like you mentioned it, swinging at the first two, three pitches, grounding into, outs that are a little bit unforced or at least without the patient approach that you would like from someone who's trying to set the table.
Well,
I'd like to see just a little bit more patience or a little bit more of what George Springer can provide in that sense. I guess this is something that is definitely an issue. I mean, you laid it out perfectly. It is maybe something that has snuck up though. Like when I'm watching this team on a nightly basis, am I thinking to myself always George Springer's the problem here? Probably not. I guess maybe a culmination of events here and a pretty bad stat or a pretty damning stat.
Guess what he's batting the last seven games?
Well, the seven's like, I mean, Bo Bichette's probably batting
14 games.
0.38.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I don't know what it is for George,
100.
But it is building up.
100.
Sure. He's not having a good run here, but neither is Bo Bichette. And these guys go through it and we can cherry pick good and bad, but this is more than just cherry picking, of course, with what you laid out and what is a philosophical issue, because it seems like there's not enough patience from a guy who's made his living being the guy who sets the table for great teams. So hopefully, this is a lull. Hopefully this is something that can be addressed. I just would not expect, you know, George Springer to be batting seventh anytime soon.
No, and I don't want that either. But it's interesting. It's been a very important stretch for the Blue Jays, and clearly they've been effective. Best 30 and 20 in the last 50, but without your guy being a massive contributor, I mean, maybe that is a point of best baseball still to become played for George Springer.
And it says a lot about what Vladdy's been doing over the last little bit. It says a lot about what Whit Merrifield has been doing.
Brandon Belt's
been very good. Brandon Belt's still like, as long as he's hitting third, I'm going to be like, oh man. Like
Whit goes four for five last night.
But Whit Merrifield has been unbelievable. Like just so good this year. 4 for 5 last night. An all-star, of course. Like he is saving a contract year or saving a really great performance for a contract year, a contract opportunity year for him. I mean, he's been so good. So you can highlight bad, you can highlight good. It goes up and down, it changes. Someone who's, you know, the issue is the solution one day and the next. And that's not me being sort of the optimist, but if I'm going to bank on someone getting it right for when it matters, I'm going to assume George Springer's approach is going to improve just a little
bit. And I would put Bo Bichette in that same category of someone that I do trust can find a way. He's been one of the best players in baseball consecutively over the last couple of years in the second half of a season, right? It was like Bo-tober. It was Bo at the end of the season really turning it on. But since the All-Star break, he's been in a slump. Where he's like 0-17 in his last four games. His batting average dropped pretty significantly since then, and he's obviously not in the lineup last night. I don't think that that's a punishment to say, but maybe an opportunity for a little rest and reset for him.
It was until he was thrust in the game and, you know, not driving in runs, but picking up walks to tack on insurance runs. Like,
he needs to get right, and so does George Springer. But like, the thing is, if they're doing well enough right now and you have those two guys underperforming, that's where you have the positive spin of there is a potential that they get hot at the right time.
It is funny to me that when you get a day off, you actually just work. If you're Bo Bichette, like, he played a lot of baseball last night, get off his feet. But I mean, what did he play? Six innings? I don't know how many innings he actually played. I guess like more like four. But yeah, it was not a complete off night for Bo Bichette. And maybe that's,
I wonder if that's harder too, because you come in being like, oh, well, I'll be used when I need to be used. And maybe I don't need to go through my, I'm sure he goes through his full routine, but you're still thinking the idea that you're not in the starting lineup. Maybe there's something different about your day. And then all of a sudden you're like, okay, you're actually going to play a significant amount of baseball.
It's probably like really when you're told, you're just like, okay, I'll take the day off. Like, that makes some sense. Like, I feel like that's how I would do it. But once the game is on, you're just like, get me into this game, man.
Yeah.
And then you get in and then you feel like that's, I think it, watching from the dugout, you'd be like, okay, I'm okay entering this game.
All right, so Blue Jays back in action again tonight. Another 10 p.m. start time. So get your naps in when needed. We did get a little info on Hyunjin Ryu, who obviously is going to be a big point of conversation. It has been for the last week or two, where his return seemed imminent. He played or pitched really well in AAA on Friday. We've been circling him maybe as someone that had an opportunity to join the team this road trip.
Well, but we've circled him as like the domino. Like, we need to see you before we do anything at the trade deadline.
Then Alek Manoah were the two dominoes of information that the Blue Jays probably need to make some informed decisions. But it sounds like he won't be joining the Blue Jays in terms of in any of the plans to pitch in this upcoming series and the upcoming series against the Angels, which is this weekend at home. So what happens after the Angels series? The trade deadline. I'm a little worried that not being able to see him in a big league game, I mean, you have a lot of questions. AAA is one thing, and yeah, his rehab starts have been good, but this is also the major leagues, right? Mm-hmm. Seeing him in one game would be very, very helpful to understand if you need to go out and get another starter. You had one more Alek Manoah start before the trade deadline, at least, so at least you maybe get a better sample size. But I really wanted to see Hyunjin Ryu this week because the trade deadline is 1 week away.
Maybe it's not good process to be like, hey, Ryu, let's see you once, and then we'll just be like, okay, you're good. We'll pencil you in every fifth, every sixth day, whatever it's going to be.
When Alek Manoah was down, they literally gave him one opportunity and made a big judgment on that, too.
It definitely. Sometimes it applies one way for one guy, a different way for another. I think we saw that with Nathan Pearson, who's, you know, now has to be semi-rebuilt because he's got options and you don't want to send down or lose other people. Like, I get that there are different rules that apply for everyone. And I guess Ryu would be like as steady as you can get. Like, you're not going to get, I don't think, spectacular Hyunjin Ryu. I think you're going to get, okay, maybe serviceable Hyunjin Ryu. But this tells me that they're not counting on him in any discernible way.
It starts to feel like they're going to get a starting pitcher.
It does. And it says to me that, you know, I think the safety net, the initial safety net will be Ryu. Ryu's going to get an opportunity here. Ryu's going to get a chance to start games, and we'll see how it goes. But it probably tells me, because they're not going to see it, that they're going to have multiple safety nets. Mm-hmm. And this safety net might be even lesser in terms of pecking order, might be lesser in terms of name value, might be lesser in terms of actual ability because, well, you do have some options, but you don't know about those options. You don't really know about Manoah. You don't know about Ryu. We got to add someone, but we don't want to go full bore here because we might have enough as it is. It just seems like there's almost too much complication to the matter. And to just add at the fringes is not exactly what I'm going to get excited about at this deadline. What's going to put them over the top? What's going to make them better than the Baltimore Orioles or the Tampa Bay Rays or the Texas Rangers or whoever they're going to face down the line here? It just seems like they're setting themselves up to make a pretty fringe addition, which is underwhelming to me. I guess they still have the opportunity to have Hyunjin Ryu start and knock their socks off and blow everyone away. And hey, maybe he's the better option to Manoah down the stretch over the season. But I feel like them not wanting to see it first means it's not really the plan.
And I definitely don't want to force him into anything. He's only hit 85 pitches back in AAA on Friday. But even a shorter stint with Ryu would have been at least a little bit level of confidence headed into the trade deadline next week. But yeah, John Schneider saying it's very unlikely that he'll make his return from Tommy John until after Tuesday's trade deadline. So maybe the idea, the competition between him and Manoah and Kikuchi for that final spot or final two spots, it might be overstated a little bit, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Blue Jays now have the idea of adding maybe a more experienced, older starting pitcher to their rotation. And probably is not going to blow your socks off. So we do have John Morosi on a seven, as I mentioned. So we'll ask him about that. And if this Manoah Ryu situation pretty much tips the hand that the Blue Jays will be looking for some starting pitching. More rumors was about Lance Lynn. So Lance Lynn has been one of the, top 10, 15 available trade targets this offseason or this midseason here. And apparently he has the Blue Jays on his no trade list. So unfortunately that one isn't going to happen. You raised a good point. So this is from Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic.
Yep.
Who wrote that Lance Lynn has a 10-team no trade list. The Blue Jays, the Mariners, the Padres, the Giants, the Dodgers, the Angels, the Cardinals, the Mets, the Yankees, and the Rays on his list.
Yeah, apparently this guy doesn't want to compete.
He doesn't want
to
win.
He don't want to go to the playoffs. And I don't really blame him.
He wants to go to like a nice, relaxing atmosphere where nobody cares.
Yeah, he wants to like, okay, there. You know, I'm an addition for the trade deadline in a stretch run. But if we don't actually do anything in this stretch run, I'm okay with
it. Just let me go half vacay.
Yeah, it's a half vacay.
Go to Arizona golf.
Maybe get me to like a little bit of less of a pressure situation where my game log, which I'm looking at right now, does not get the microscope on it at all whatsoever. He has given up at least, like, he's given up more than there's a couple one
he's
run outings in there.
ERA.
But essentially the only great start, the only really, really good start, the only thing that looks dominant whatsoever on this game log is the game that we saw him pitch against the Toronto Blue Jays, where he went seven innings and didn't give up an earned run. But pretty much every other time out, if I'm looking at the last 10 outings for him, he's given up at least 3-4 earned runs with the exception of that Blue Jays game. So is he like my number one guy?
No.
Would I accept him if he wanted to be a Blue Jay? Sure. I think throwing another arm is interesting into the mix.
But he's not interested in trying to win.
But he's not interested in going to a market that actually like cares about its baseball.
He'd like to go to the Arizona Diamondbacks and golf.
Maybe he just really wants to be an Oriole because that's the only team that's not listed
here. Well, that's interesting, yeah.
That makes sense.
He couldn't get an 11-team no trade list. He had to pick one.
I don't know why he wasted a spot there with the Cardinals. Cardinals, I don't think, are adding Lance.
Hasn't he already played for the Cardinals? I think he has.
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe just didn't feel like going back.
Too much attention.
Okay. So there's your update on a Blue Jay that will never be. We do have a little bit of more, trickling of Shohei Ohtani. So this is from our guy, John Morosi. Every day you're going to get more information on Shohei as the clock ticks.
John is one of the guys who's we were talking about Shohei Ohtani pretty much all last week on Drive Time. Like everyone we had on, we wanted to ask about Ohtani, and everyone is so reluctant to talk about it, to talk about what it might cost, what the Angels should do. Everyone's kind of like really distancing themselves from the conversation. I guess the stakes are that high.
But
that
I also think it's because you have no idea. Like, I don't know what the package would be. You don't want to sound like a fool when they lose him for, minor leaguers. Or the opposite.
Definitely.
100
draft picks. Prominent baseball people have not wanted to put their name on, like, a real Shohei Ohtani discussion.
Yeah.
With the exception of John Morosi. John Morosi's been talking about Shohei Ohtani for weeks. And I hope John Morosi's right with where, you know, he's maybe leaning to, where it's like, yeah, this is still a possibility. There are just still discussions happening. Of course, we'll talk to John, but we need more baseball people about this.
Okay, well, we got one at least, and he's on at 7. Shohei is scheduled to start Friday night at the Rogers Center. Tickets are really hard to get for obviously the understandable reason that this could be maybe one of the last times you see Shohei on this team. Maybe not, but still, nonetheless, he doesn't come to the Rogers Center often, so if you can get a chance to go on Friday, it'll be absolutely electric. But John Morosi last night on Monday saying that the Angels have recently engaged in trade discussions with other teams. According to Baseball Reference, they have a 9.6% chance of making the postseason. So obviously, there's the idea that there's a couple schools of thought. You make the postseason, you kind of go all in at the trade deadline, you make the postseason, then you show Shohei that you can be a postseason team. Hey, you should stay here. You should sign long-term because we can make the playoffs. Or you do the same thing. You go all in at the trade deadline, you don't make the playoffs, you lose a lot of assets, and then you lose Shohei Ohtani. Or you trade Shohei Ohtani and you kind of, you know, admit defeat. He goes somewhere else. And then there is the school of thought that maybe he still wants to come back and sign and play for your team. It honestly can go, I don't know, 5-6 different directions. But at this point, as of yesterday, it sounds like they're at least listening to trade discussions now that they're, what, a 9.6 chance of making the postseason. So
and this
get
this
a chance
comes
to see him
heel.
This weekend, like, though.
I understand it's 9.6, and I'm not going to deny that. But they just, since the All-Star break, they did lose a series to the Astros. They responded to that by sweeping the New York Yankees. Then they just took 2 of 3 from the Pittsburgh Pirates. So they've won 5 of their last 6. And that's the reality, I guess, of being in the American League, where you can win 5 of 6. You can be in the conversation and you're still under 10%. To make
they're
the playoffs.
They're 4 games out of the final wild card spot in the American League right now.
What a tough position that is to be in. Because you're only 4.5 out. You have Shohei Ohtani. Mm-hmm. And you're probably not going to have him beyond the season. I guess you could come up with the money and maybe mortgage the future and become, you know, it would be very, very difficult for them to compete in the financial space with, of course, the big teams in Major League Baseball. But I guess they could do it if they really, really felt compelled to, and if Shohei Ohtani actually wanted to stay. But you have this major decision, your team has responded, and you make up no ground.
Well, listen to this,
too. It does nothing for you.
They had yesterday off. They just started a 3-game set against the Tigers. Then they start a 3-game set against the Blue Jays. Conceivably, they could sweep the Tigers, you'd hope.
They could.
And they could take 1 of 2 or 2 of 1, 2 of 3 against the Blue Jays. And then you're right on the cusp and you have to make a decision the next day, basically, because you're playing the Braves on the 31st and you got to have a trade package basically set in stone by the 1st, of course, right? Like they seriously could beat the Tigers 3 games here. And then what? You come into Toronto, and the Blue Jays might be the determining factor of where Shohei Ohtani goes. They let the Angels walk all over them this weekend, and maybe Shohei doesn't go. Maybe they absolutely crush the Angels, and we see no more Shohei, and it's at the hands of our baseball team. Like, we are in a very special spot this weekend when Shohei comes to town, because a lot is riding on this series.
We need Shohei Ohtani to get the old tap on the shoulder in a dugout at Rogers Center.
Oh, my God, imagine.
The manager needs to see you, Shohei.
What if he just keeps his bags and walks across the hallway
to
the Blue Jays?
It'd be like Rasmus Sandin when he's walking.
So funny.
When all the cameras are on Rasmus Sandin getting off the ice. Yeah, and then there's hugs with the Swedish guys after practice.
I know it's happened in hockey before where someone's been traded to the team that they're playing and they just keep their bag. I forget when the last time. I don't know if I've seen that in baseball. I'm trying to remember. Someone in the text line
I'm sure it has, yeah.
Where you're like, oh, actually, you know what? Don't board this private jet afterwards. Yeah,
you're staying here.
You're here, buddy.
The vibes in this city this weekend.
Can you imagine if Shohei, I mean, this is so stupid, but like just for a second, let yourself dream, okay? Have your coffee this morning. Close your eyes. Like the CN Tower would have, I remember when it was Canada's 150th birthday and they had fireworks coming off the CN Tower. It was actually pretty cool. That's what they would do this weekend if there was ever a chance in Shohei staying here. They would light fireworks off the CN Tower. It'd be stunning.
There is nothing I would not package off for Shohei Ohtani. 2 months of it. Make yourselves the World Series favorites immediately. There's nothing I wouldn't do to
get
Shohei Ohtani.
Some team is going to get that, possibly.
I really, really hope it happens. It will be amazing.
It will be such a circus, too. Like, let's say he goes to, I don't even know what teams are. It's like, every day changes. Let's just pretend it's the
Baltimore,
Dodgers.
Tampa. It's not going to be the Dodgers because they know they're getting him and they don't have to pay the price.
That's true. Okay, so it's someone in our division. It's the Tampa Bay Rays or the Baltimore Orioles. I kind of hope it's the Orioles. You want it to be the Rays because they spend no money and then you want to see them actually do something.
I mean, I think the Rays story would be amazing if it's like, hey, forever, a quarter century of not paying people, not going out into
forever.
Free agency, and all of a sudden you play that one card once and it's the greatest baseball player who ever lived. Like, it's
ironic.
It's pretty cool. Orioles, Rays, Blue Jays is like, that's, I want him in the American League East, but it will hurt if he's a Red Sox or Yankee.
It'd be pretty sweet. All right, so more to come with Shohei, with John Morosi on Shohei at 7 o'clock. All right, more things that happened yesterday. This crazy, crazy Kylian Mbappe stuff is actually...
If you can't see Ailish, which you can't right now, hands on the head. Like, she's not dealing with this well.
Let me get the money, or you have the exact amount, right? I don't want to mess this up.
Well, I don't... I'll get, it's $1 billion.
I have it.
It is $1 billion flat, is
it
not?
But it was like two...
I'm pretty sure it's
$300 million plus like a $700 million package. Like, it,
so
it
over
equals
$1 billion.
Yeah.
Or a billion. Or the value is $1 billion, basically, for Kylian Mbappe. That's the price tag that Saudi Arabia has put on.
$1.1 billion.
$1.1 billion.
Exactly,
okay,
right.
So
a world record of money.
We shortchanged him. Did you ever think in your lifetime?
No.
Now, I wasn't thinking about money, you know, when I was a little kid, how much value athletes would be.
I
but now
either.
In this world where it's like, oh, Connor McDavid makes $12.5 million, $100 million contract for an NHL player. Wow. Did you ever think in your lifetime, 1 year for one athlete, $1.1 billion?
Never. I don't even know how to contextualize $1 billion.
Like, he could be, he does this. Like, any, he's a billionaire.
So,
like,
just
any,
lay it out.
Any,
so
any opportunity to do him in the world
is
there for
game,
him.
One season. So, Saudi Arabian club Al-Hilal is preparing to make a $1.1 billion offer to sign Kylian Mbappe from PSG. It would be $332 million transfer.
So PSG is like, yes, please,
yes.
Kylian, do this.
$332 million.
We would love $300 and whatever million.
And then he'd get $776 million salary for one season.
And then he gets to do
then
what
do
he wants
after.
To do. And this is all in the heels of, okay, he wants to go to Real Madrid.
Yeah.
He's the best player in the world, I guess. And he wants to play for probably the biggest club in the world, or one of the biggest clubs in the world, in Real Madrid. The team that, like, a lot of guys think of as the most prestigious. It's the destination for a lot of the high-end European players and players all around the world. He wants to go there. PSG is not going to just let him walk because PSG has him under contract for one more year, I suppose. But PSG can sell him to anywhere at any time if he's willing to agree on it. PSG can profit off him, and this is exactly what Saudi Arabia is trying to do, trying to give them what would be, I would imagine, far more than they pay annually for their players in one shot and just a transfer fee. I mean, they're a rich club, but it's probably substantially more than what they pay for their players, and that's with Kylian Mbappe on the team. So anyway, they basically can fund years of their organization with one sell-off, one transfer fee. And in addition to that, Mbappe in this deal would make more than double individually to put in his own bank account. Over almost $800 million for 1 year for what? 50 games,
somebody
maybe?
In the text line said the concerning figure is that the concerning part is the figures in euros. Is
well,
that right?
There you go.
Mike in Toronto. I'm going to double check that.
I mean,
it's
more money.
It is euros. 300 million euros.
So we're talking more money.
It is euros.
But we're talking about the amount of money where it doesn't even matter. Like, Kylian Mbappe does this, you're talking about close to $1 billion then, if it's euros, right?
Oh, it's more. Isn't the euro?
The euros got to be, well, this is
like
a
here,
financial
I just put in sure 1.1 billion euros.
To U.S. dollars.
To U.S. dollars, and it is 1.7 or 8
okay,
billion.
Okay, so basically he would be paid $1 billion U.S. to do this.
More.
He would, because he's making less than 800.
Oh,
so
yes,
it would be
sorry.
A little bit more than $1 billion,
the
I
deal
think.
Itself.
So if you do this, and he apparently doesn't want to do it.
But how can you say no to this?
If signs off on this, we're talking about $500 million to PSG, over $1 billion in his bank account personally. He can do anything in the, like, he can take care of generations and generations of every distant, everyone he ever met.
He can do whatever he wants
forever.
Everyone
he ever met in his life, he could take care of. Like, this is crazy, crazy money for one person, and it's only a 1-year commitment. But he doesn't want to do it.
Someone in the text line goes, to put $1 billion into perspective, you can get $1 a second for 32 years before you hit a billion. Whatever, I became, no.
He could start up, he could go there for a year, start a new team.
He could make his own, buy his own team, yeah.
Bring in his own players and just like have a celebrity all-star team to play in the Spanish La Liga if he wanted. Like he could do anything because he's getting paid more than I would say 99% of soccer clubs around the world would be operating with annually.
And it got the attention of some other players in other leagues. LeBron James obviously saw this and tweeted out, me headed to Saudi when they call Rich Paul and Maverick Carter for that 1-year deal. And it's the gif of Forrest Gump, like, running. Mm. And then Draymond Green tweeted, they got basketball leagues too, right? ? With all those emojis that's, like, shocked, running emoji. I don't think the ink on my contract has dried up yet. Obviously, they're kind of joking around, but at the same time, it's like...
They are, but they're like...
You tweeted it.
They're
like,
not.
You're thinking about, oh my God... $1 billion.
So soccer makes the most sense for Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
And this is the whole sports washing thing. This is the live golf thing. This is everything that we've been talking about for a while. Of course, Cristiano Ronaldo went to Saudi Arabia. Not making anywhere close to, I don't think, what Kylian Mbappe would be making. Anyway, a lot of big names at the end of their careers have done this. They've cashed in. They've made this money. It makes sense. It makes all the sense in the world for Saudi Arabia to go after soccer. It is the global game if they want to... you know, shore up their reputation, if they want to get, you know, mega celebrities in their country. I guess this is the best route. Golf has always been a little bit weird because who cares about golf compared to soccer, at least globally around the world in general. Like, mm-hmm. It's not even close. It has always made sense to go after soccer. Does it make sense, though, to go after basketball next? It probably does. Does,
like,
it not?
Like, you're not going to go over hockey. Like, no.
No.
Baseball...
No,
I don't think so. Basketball
both of those
would be
are
next.
Too local.
Basketball is more global.
Yeah, and I'm kind of surprised basketball has not been a part of this discussion.
I think you might see it.
How long is Adam Silver going to resist this if there is interest? And what happens if they actually get a stake in basketball? If they get a stake in the NBA? If LeBron James has done his career and then just moves there for $1 billion? Would we be surprised if that happened? I don't really know. It is all a bit scary. It's a little...
Like,
I
we're
mean,
laughing about $1 billion, but at the same time, it's like this trickle effect could be crazy if this is what we start seeing in the way sports are run.
I think you kind of want, despite like the financial windfall and what it would give to people and organizations to ensure the safety of these organizations and health, like if the NHL was suddenly influx, there was an influx of Saudi money in the NHL, I mean, the NHL would be in a better...
How much money would Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews' new salary
Are we quibbling about William Nylander if there's apparently...
No.
No, we're not.
Pay him whatever.
Exactly. There's no salary cap, or the salary cap is something that... Like, there's no problems. Problems don't exist in the NHL if there's an influx of money. And that's what's scary. How long until everyone fails to resist this, right? And even Kylian Mbappe is resisting it for now, but can he wake up again this morning and be like, am I turning down $1 billion?
His family's like, come on, man.
And I get to do what I want to do
after that? Get to play 1 year of soccer.
It's pretty terrifying.
What would you do with $1 billion? 590, 590. Someone says, you could buy the Sens.
I would 100% buy a sports team. Like, there's no question about it. What would you do?
I don't know. Throw up.
Double screening of Barbie Oppenheimer?
I would buy all of the screening. I would buy all the movie theaters and watch Barbie again because it was that good. I saw it last night.
Do you want to? I have the one question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to do that in the A-list or you want to do that now?
Oh, whatever. Same thing.
Okay. So I one word to describe Oppenheimer. You gave me what? Powerful?
Powerful.
One word to describe Barbie? What is it?
Joyful.
Joyful.
It was so fun. Honestly.
You're more of a Barbie person. If we're doing the personalities, Barbie over Oppenheimer?
I don't know. I think I could be a split screen.
Oh, you do it all.
Well, it was really, really fun. I was laughing out loud. I don't usually laugh out loud in movies. I was laughing out loud many times. Everybody in the theater was full of joy.
I like it?
Yeah, I think you will because your buddy's in it.
But beyond that.
Yeah, I think you will. It's not just like, oh, you have to be a girl to like Barbie. It was really, really fun. There's actually a good story to it. It's not just like people playing with Barbies. Like, I don't want to ruin it, but there's a good underlying story or message.
So the plot works.
It was laugh out loud funny.
And it's laugh out loud funny.
It was enjoyable aesthetically to watch. Like, it's fun. It's colorful. It's like good music. There's a whole soundtrack. And all I got to say here now is that this Halloween, don't even bother. It's going to be, everyone will be wearing some sort of a Barbie outfit or Oppenheimer. Like, there will be no other Halloween costumes. You'll be either in one of these time period
suits. You think it'll
last
that long?
Yes. Yes. There will be no other Halloween costumes. It will be Barbie or Oppenheimer.
Okay.
And there you get to show your allegiance. Because I went to theater last night, and people were wearing legitimate ball gowns to the theater.
Now, I don't really understand that. Like, I get it's a joyful, fun movie.
But everybody was like, because you got into the Barbie theme. Everybody was wearing pink. People were, honestly, Justin, wearing heels and dresses.
Does Barbie wear ball gowns?
Yeah, Barbies dress up. Like, there's outfits you can put on them.
But what is Barbie's stock wardrobe? Like, what if you buy the original Barbie, what is Barbie wearing?
I don't know, like a bathing suit?
That's what I thought it was. Bathing suits.
Or like a dress. Like, she's wearing like a cute dress. But it doesn't matter. Like, people went all in. Like, it was actually really cute to see groups of friends. Like, I went with two of my girlfriends and we wore something pink. Like,
I didn't go all out, though.
Like, I felt like I needed to wear something pink.
A prom dress.
And when you're walking to the theater, you see all these people in pink and you're like, hey, we're all going to see Barbie. It was fun.
Okay.
I think you should go see it. Okay, you're not too good for Barbie.
I didn't say it was.
And your friend's in it.
I will see it.
Your friend, do you want to mention who your friend is?
I think I have before, but yeah, Michael Cera's in it.
I'm friends. And
I am friends with Michael Cera.
He is a really good character. He's a little unsung hero in the movie, I'll tell you that.
And that's my little secret, is that I know the movie would be good, not because he's in it because he'll make it good, but he doesn't do things that won't be good. He's not into that life anymore. He does things that he's confident in, so I knew in that way that Barbie was going to be positive.
It was worth the price of admission, and I've eaten so much popcorn the last 2 days, on Saturday night with Oppenheimer and Monday night with Barbie. So,
how much money have you spent on popcorn the last week?
More than I should have.
Give me I don't even know what it was. I never buy popcorn.
Probably like $40.
$40 on popcorn. There you go.
More than the tickets.
Yep.
One last one before we take a break. Allison Toronto says, check out Giannis's Mbappe tweet, and I just went and looked it up, and he goes, all halal, you can take me. I look like Kylian Mbappe, and it's a selfie of him.
Yeah, that's another reason why the LeBron tweet was corny, because Giannis already did it.
Yeah.
Giannis already nailed the joke.
He beat him. Yeah. All right, we got some fun stuff in the A-list. That is next. John Morosi at 7, Charles Davis at 7:30. I don't think you can name a better hour of guests, like just wholesome loveliness. And then we've got Julia Kreutz and Matthew Tkachuk to round out our show. Another incredible hour.
Kind of buried
of
the lead.
Radio.
Yeah.
Matthew Tkachuk later in the show.
No big deal.
Full star-studded list. And the A-list is next.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Now, it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
All right, quick shout out to a very, very nice man who came to visit Justin and I at the Jay's Care Golf Classic yesterday. I just was listening down the road and came by to say hello. George, thanks for stopping by and saying
hi to us.
George
from Milton, old school.
He was lovely.
Not on social media, so had to do it.
He just came by as a
IRL.
Human, said, I'm going to go find these guys. Came by, shook our hands, chatted for a little bit. So shout out to George. Lovely to meet you. We love meeting our listeners in
real
life.
Great guy. Great guy.
It was a very fun day yesterday. So here's one quick A-list that is golf related in honor of that. So Brian Harman obviously had a pretty dialed week at the Open.
He was putting a little bit.
His putting was pristine. He missed one shot under 10 feet all weekend long. And just held the lead the entire time. So before he won, he was asked about, like, how did you figure out your putting? And his answer was, oh, I can't tell you. I'm not going to tell you. But after he lifts the claret jug a day later, he was like, okay, I'll tell you about my training aid and how I got so good at putting. So maybe listen up because I might need this. Mm. Okay, so quote, I found this. It's a silly looking mirror where it's got like a little better release pattern. I was just kind of cutting my putts too much, so I spent a lot of time just feeling the ball, almost hitting like a baby draw with my putter, and it's been really, really good the last month ago. So he acquired this mirror, put it on a practice green, and was watching his putting in front of a mirror. And so I guess it's just been, I don't know, super insightful. Clearly he's like moved to from almost the bottom to the top and strokes gained on putting, but maybe it's just like a little mirror you need to watch the way the ball's coming off the putter.
A little mini draw. That's simple. I guess you need a mini draw. I feel like you wouldn't do that. You just want to hit putts straight.
He called it a silly looking mirror. So find mirror, one.
I mean, he'll hold that forever in reverence, I guess.
Go to your
Where's
local.
Where's that mirror now?
Yeah, go to the little garage sale, pick up a silly looking mirror, and you can putt like Brian Harman.
Wouldn't he be putting it into the mirror constantly? I'd have to see him do it for that to make sense to me.
I'll try to find a video for you, but that's his secret. So everybody's going to go out and get some silly-looking mirrors. Okay, we've got some more that we can sprinkle in throughout the show. We got John Morosi after the break, the latest on Shohei, the latest on where the Blue Jays stand with Ryu not making an appearance before the trade deadline, most likely. How does that change what the Blue Jays might prioritize in 1 week? The trade deadline is here. John Morosi, MLB Network Insider, is next.